Welcome to the Living Farms podcast, where voices from around the world come together to shape the future of biodynamic agriculture.
Hello to everybody. We are continuing our series of the Living Farms podcast from the section of agriculture here at the Goetheanum, and continuing with our very beautiful exploration of how biodynamics lives in different countries and in different consciousness and in different people. We have the honor now of having Livon Israeli from Israel, who I met some years ago attending different parts of the biodynamic conferences and also related to the BFDI and other aspects. And we had the pleasure of teaching together recently on a series of courses called Astronomical Farming. Maybe some of you were able to attend. And then there it was really beautiful to see how complementary views of the world can come together, and how we both agreed that we have to look at certain things in our movement differently, especially to help younger people, people just coming into biodynamics, to have a broader picture. And we focus there on certain aspects of the calendar that were important to both of us. But we will go into that a little bit later. For now, I welcome you, Livon. It's so nice to have you here. And when you told me a little bit of your biography, it meant so much to me, because you told me you were born in a kibbutz. And as many people may know around the world, kibbutz were, some of them were related to agriculture. And we all know that agriculture in Israel is very particular. It has certain gestures. Sometimes it's very technological. Sometimes it is really working with the desert. And many people in the world are so surprised how it is possible to grow things in the desert. And you are also a consultant. You have a background in living and growing in a kibbutzi, but then you went into other aspects of life, and you have a formal education, which is also something very beautiful and very interesting. Even today, you just finished turning in your doctoral thesis, which I would like for you to say a few words about that. But you've developed both very strong practice. You are a consultant in your country, traveling and teaching a lot. And at the same time, you're a scientist, you're a researcher. And you've also developed, I see in your curriculum, a lot of experience in anthroposophy and other areas. So it's really beautiful to bring your point of view to this podcast and how you see the world from your area. How does biodynamics live in the deserts? How do you bring it with your own experiences and with your viewpoints of science, biodynamics, anthroposophy? And I also know that, like other people, you were also learning Ayurveda when you were younger. So all of this brings a richness to the movement that is very important to cherish and to be conscious of, because you bring a very beautiful point of view into our world. So I would like to start with asking you about those first moments in your life when you were in the kibbutz, and then you decided to go into science, and then you found biodynamics. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here. I so much appreciate this conversation that you make. They're all so interesting to follow. Yeah, growing up in the kibbutz was really life-shaping, because my grandfather was the founder of the community. My father was born there, and I'm a third generation. And as a small anecdote, my grandfather trained when he was a young person in agriculture, and it was in Poland, about half an hour to 1 hour drive from Kordowitz. And he was a young man at the agriculture course time. So I found this interesting life connection. And growing up in the kibbutz, I really see that this community and working together in farming, this is what shaped my life. If I look who were my parents, they were the community much more than just my biological parents. And this is something that I really feel is one thread throughout my life. This, how do we work together as a community in agriculture? And growing from it, there was quite an industrial oriented way of farming, quite a materialistic way of community. And this is where, in kind of my dialogue with my grandfather that is not alive anymore, it was really this question, what happened to this movement? Because it started with such a bloom, what helped shape this country at the edge of the desert. But today you can count on one hand those communities that are really holding the old ways of the kibbutz and are really communal in the sense of way of working in the world. And for me, it was really a question of the spirit. You know, they fell into matter, into substance so much that they could not see why should a child stay with his biological parents and not go to be with a taker just for productivity sense, you know, that the parents could work efficiently and then there's a professional taking care of the children. This is how my father grew up, and I could really see how it influenced myself. And it was only later on, after I left the kibbutz, that I came into organic farming, and suddenly there was a shift from what I knew at home about how do we work with nature, the different idea of more solidarity and community working in agriculture that was different from the original way of the kibbutz, but still something did not feel all the way at place at home for myself. And it was only when I married, who is now my ex-wife, a German woman, that I got to know biodynamics in Europe, in Germany. And suddenly I was like, how? Where is that? Why is it not awake here in Israel? And in a sense, it came my wish after starting to attempt it, to practice it when nobody is making the preparation in Israel, nobody speaks about it. There was an old Hebrew version of the agriculture course, but there was nobody to study it with. And it was a sense, my question or my impulse, how to make it accessible in the Hebrew language for the farmers with their ways and history that I knew from my kibbutz community, how to make it accessible. And I feel from that time it's really been my call, how to make it available to any farmer. And in a sense, if I look at biography, it was quite an interesting twist. So I was farming for several years. I was practicing biodynamics. There was not so much accessible information in English. My German was not that good at the time. So I got to know it better in the UK, in Tablehurst, and was following a lot of what was available. I remember ordering recordings of the American agriculture conferences. At the time, they were just sending recordings of it, not videos. And then trying to implement it at the farm where I worked, until I suffered a heat stroke working as a biological control management, you know, putting insects in organic greenhouses. At the heat of the desert, you can imagine what it can do to your body.
Yeah.
And then I literally was so infused by the heat that even if I would just walk outside when it was warm, my body was in pain. And literally, I needed to stop the everyday farming to get healing for myself. And I could not understand what happened to it, what caused it. I could not understand how long it would take. to change it. And this is what turned me into consulting and advising and then setting up Adama Chaya, my organization today. So it was really, if we talk biography, a really interesting twist. I got into organic farming, I got into biodynamics in practice, and then I needed to stop working the land. And then only when I stopped working the land, then I opened to the world and in a sense, see how I can bring what I've learned and the ways of my understanding wider.
This is so interesting. I think biographies are important. A lot of people participating in our courses will feel the importance of looking at your own biography, because it is from there that you take the strength and the clarity and also sometimes the pain that helps you move forward and say, I need to do this differently. I need to bring it. And this is really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And at some point you told me that you are reawakening biodynamics in Israel. And also, I think it is very, very relevant that you are also a scientist and now bringing forward research, consulting, and the anthroposophical basis of your work. And for me, this makes so much sense of how you come into biodynamics. And the fact, and I'm sorry to say this, I don't mean it in a bad way, the fact that you had a heat stroke really put you in contact with the gestures, the elements. And now I know that you look at the world through gestures. And this is something very key to what we were teaching in the astronomical farming and also to our talk today. And I also know that you are fond or you resonate with Dennis Klosik's work. And in the podcast that he shared with us, he started with this image of the spirits of time, then the architect, and then the builders. And I think from that image, it is interesting that maybe you can take it from there and bring it to this idea of the link between the elements and the gestures in your own way of looking at things. Can you tell us, can you share a little bit of that with us?
Yes, it was back then already when I was farming that I got to know Dennis Brooks. It was really enthusiastic to see this vastness of his knowledge. But still, it was really this question, because I had nobody to reflect it with. How do you understand it in simple ways? And the first time I got into biodynamic agriculture reading group, I was listening to all the lectures and saying to myself, this is Ayurveda spoken in another language. You know, for me, there was actually never a question or a doubt or unclarity about the text. Because I had before background in Ayurveda and this way of thinking in qualities, that it was all really coherent. And another one from the biography, because I lived between English, Hebrew, and German in my family, I was used to move between languages. That's why kind of connecting anthroposophy and Ayurveda was just, okay, how I connect between Hebrew and German language. They are different, but they say something similar if you listen to the essence. And then it was really that I looked at what are we trying to perceive. And if you look the closest of this threefold that Dennis was talking about, the time, the laws, and then the processes, you see that in Ayurveda, to understand living processes, they started with an even more tangible level that is about sense perception. They say if you want to understand the earth element, if you want to understand the fire quality, you need to look at certain binary traits that are sense perceivable. If I would look at it, you know, one can always look at if something is warm or something is cold. And all living qualities have a certain level of warmness or coolness, and they are on a gradient. And if you want to understand if something is alive well, you check how warm it is. If it became too warm, you know it's becoming sick. If it becomes too cold, you know it's unwell. So in a sense, from your perception of your senses, these qualities, you can really look at pairs of qualities. It's non-numeric. You can never put a certain number to it, but it's something that everybody in their senses could understand. And then the way that they categorize it, so there's the cold and hot, there's the smooth and rough, there's the cloudy and clear, there's the dense or the liquid, the dull and the sharp, the heavy and the light, the oily or dry, the soft and hard, gross and subtle, and then static and mobile. These are 10 pairs, in a sense, that you can measure life. All of those, this list that I describe, helps you to understand it. Now, when you bring them together into groups, you can understand that those governing forces that Dennis talked about are basically combination of those qualities. So if I would want to understand earthness, solidity, it's things that are heavy, they are dull, they are static, they are dense, they are hard, and they are gross. They are never all of them together, but in a sense, you know, they are a combination, they are a spectrum of those qualities. And then if you want to explore one of those living processes, then you can better follow it because you have a sense perception. You can much more relate to it than relating to an element. Even if you give it a gnome, you know, a being qualities, still what are the qualities of this being? Once you put it in very simple to refer to attributes, I feel it's much more perceivable. How does that sound to you?
Yes, I think this is very important, especially when you're out on the field working with farmers.
Yes.
And you want to bring these images. And so depending on which part of the world, you would bring a certain attention to, for example, the seasons. Even though you may in the tropics have rainy season and no rain season, that would be a gesture in the year.
Yes.
In other places of the world, you have four moments of the year where you can clearly see the four elements.
Yeah.
But even though it makes sense in every type of region. In the desert, you have a completely different set of gestures.
Yeah.
But going into the elements and the gestures, then it's really interesting because then you can really start making decisions because your plants and your animals will be going through those gestures along their life cycle, along the year cycle. And then the question is, how do I understand these gestures in my landscape, in my year, in my plants, in my animals? And how can I help it move forward and help it, let's say, express its fullness? In a plant, it would be to get the best of the plant qualities.
Yes.
Whether it's oils, taste, or spiritual nutrition. In animals, it would be to bring them to the best health they can. So, and in the landscape, it would be, what do I do and when do I do it if I understand the gestures of my land? And am I going forward with something or am I really fighting with my land? So all of these, the way that you bring it is makes us really understand this.
Yeah, and because biodynamic was not so familiar, then even more this connection between the anthroposophic words, if I may call it like that, and the way of farming, you know, I always tell my colleagues, if you get lost with the words, whether calling something an earth element or fire element, or you talk about etheric or an astral quality, I ask, how does it feel in your fingers? You know, can you create the really simple, coherent, in a sense, scientific way, follow to say, these are the sense perceptions of those qualities. And then it doesn't matter in what the geography, because roughness is always roughness. Sharpness is always sharpness. You know if your knife is dull or if it's sharp. And these are things that are tangible. Every individual will grade them differently. And this is what's interesting about then following it up to understand your own elements in you, because you see that some people are sharp and some people are dull. You know, it brings this really live connection between what you sense in your senses, what you perceive in people, and then what you perceive in your form. And then if you see that smoothness and more smoothness are coming into, you see that you are going into a certain gesture, whether it's of the climate or the process in your farms. Many times it's about, if the words do not help, release them. This is my take on it. And this is where it connects to the scientific way of thinking. It's really about helping you to decipher what's really important and what's redundant, as they like to call it in science, you know. And the more you try to isolate components and then try to bring them together, the more that you can follow in a coherent way, what are you following? And I notice so many times that people are getting lost between words. And then I say, go step below the words, below the notions, and then how do you perceive it with your senses?
I think this is very important. And this also brings us back to community, because if you would do an exercise in a farm with all the different people that work there and observe the land, the animals, or the landscape, or the sky, and then you would exchange, you would see the richness of what people are perceiving. Some people will be very focused on certain, let's say, abstract concepts, which is part of reality. We cannot neglect it. This is very good. Some people want to look at the analysis of the soil to understand it, and this is where they start. Some other don't want to see that. They want to perceive it and touch it and smell it and taste it, and try to bring the gesture of the soil and what it needs at this particular moment in the cycle of the year. So that's very interesting that also this perception and the richness of the people in the farm can come together and say, let's look together at a certain situation that we have. Maybe in the greenhouses we have a problem with fungi or other problems with insects. And I think this brings us to the fullness of observation and sensing, and nobody is wrong. We just have different points of view. So I think in the practical way, we sometimes focus a lot on materialistic ideas. Even as we have talked about before, you can also be trapped in this idea of what is earthly.
Yes.
Or what is air or water. We constantly are trapped by concepts.
Yes.
And I think when you speak about the gestures, even when you look at the calendar or other things, just really remember to open that to a living quality that the gestures point to. So I believe that this is very important, and you have brought this before several times, how to do it.
And together with, you know, what Dennis said, that they are above the workers, they are the lawmakers, still heaviness has its law, you know? And the thing is that it's in a sense non-discussable. It is there that heavy will behave as heavy, where light will behave as light, and as much as we can understand that I can perceive heaviness and lightness in different ways, and different people will see how light it is or heavy it is in different ways. Still, we can all agree on the governing rules on the spectrum between light and heavy. This is where it links nice to this idea that those qualities, attributes of the living are governed by fixed laws that are there for existence.
Yeah. And as farmers, we are always trying to play with that. If you have a heavy soil,
yes,
or if your compost is very heavily prepared, you have to find a living solution to,
yes,
that. How do you bring lightness? How do you, or how do you work with a heavy soil?
Yes. Or what heaviness needs, or what it gives. You know, this is this question that for me it becomes much more accessible for a dialogue with, because you know what's a heavy person and you know what it takes to move a heavy person. And then if you just perceive if this quality law of heaviness exists in your soil and you want to change it, it will not work by clicking a button that you say, I'll reverse it and it will never be heavy again. But as it is to work with a heavy person to get them moving to do something, so it is this living process to work with those qualities in your farms that plays a similar role.
Yeah. And that heavy person will bring a gesture that is much needed for those who have excess fire or air, yeah, or water.
Yeah.
So it's a really beautiful balance between how do you perceive the world, what your biography brings to the farm, and it's always helpful to have that.
Yes.
I think, as we've talked before, gestures are a living quality of how we understand the world, and there should be brought forward as much as we can to move our rigid mind into a living understanding.